it speaks to just the individuality of the human being, that we hold more than one persona inside of us. We can be many things to many different people, and we often are.
That's David Baldacci, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. David Baldacci is one of the most widely read thriller writers in the world and a global number one best-selling author with more than 200 million books sold. He joins us to talk about Hope Rises, the second book in his Walter Nash series. David, welcome to Conversations.
Hey, great. It's great to be back.
Now, this is the second book in your saga of Walter Nash. So for those who maybe haven't had the opportunity to read the first book, tell us about Walter. Who is he?
Walter Nash is a businessman. He's unlike a lot of my other characters. He's never been in the military or never been part of an agency, never fired a gun in anger, never lifted a weight. But he's been really good at business. So he works for this firm in investments. The only blight on his life is he's been estranged from his dad for most of his life. Nash has a wife and a daughter. They live in a wonderful home. Beginning of Nash Falls, his father has died from Agent Orange exposure in Vietnam. Nash goes to the funeral, and his father's best friend gets up and trashes Nash at the eulogy in front of everyone and kind of just destroys him. And Nash goes home, and late that night, he's out in his backyard trying to process all this. And then an FBI agent approaches him and gives him a choice. He tells Nash that the firm he's been working for all these years, where he's made all this money, is actually a criminal organization. And Nash can, one, help them bring it down. And if he does, Nash will lose everything he has. Or two, not help them bring it down, and he will lose everything he has. So those are his choices. And he really has to reinvent himself going forward. And he goes through a lot of adventures and loses a whole lot in Nash Falls, has to change his life, become someone else. And now at the beginning of Hope Rises, his name is Dylan Hope. He's, you know, cut all his hair off. He's bulked up. He's got tats all over him. You can't recognize the guy as Walter Nash. And he has embedded himself right in the middle of this criminal organization that the FBI wants him to bring down. And that's where the story of Hope Rises picks up. And that's where we're off running now.
And in the beginning of Hope Rises, you do give people sort of synopsis of what happened in the first book. But there's so much going on, I would say, yeah, it could stand alone, but it'd be really great if you read Nash Falls first.
Yeah, my publisher will say that in order to fully enjoy Hope Rises, you should read my entire body of collected work. But definitely, it'll be a better read if you've read the first novel.
Now, let's just talk about this development of the character Walter Nash. Here is a character that goes through such a massive transformation. What attracted you to telling this kind of story?
You know, these days, I had in mind when I was putting Walter Nash together that he had achieved the American dream. You know, generations are told you work hard, you get a good education, nose to the grindstone, do the right things, you will achieve the American dream and success. And he did. You know, by any measure, he has, you know, considerable wealth. He has a wonderful lifestyle. He's happy. He's healthy. He's in a privileged spot in his life. And then it's all taken away from him, you know, having nothing to do with him. So that's the first point, because I think a lot of people these days can relate to that. I did everything I was supposed to do, and now it's all gone for whatever reason. AI has taken my job, my career. Now, I think he's done in this book what a lot of people feel they have to do during the course of their lives. He's had to reinvent himself into someone else he never thought he was going to be, never thought he needed to be. But people do that all the time. You know, we go through life and something happens, a traumatic event or a catastrophe, a job loss, whatever. We have to really become someone else. And I think that it speaks to just the individuality of the human being, that we hold more than one persona inside of us. We can be many things to many different people, and we often are. I think that in this novel, I just used Walter Nash as a vehicle to sort of show the extraordinary lengths to what people can do to become someone different. And I like to write stories where readers can relate to what's going on. That you may think, well, my God, what happened to Nash will never happen to me. But it does happen to people in smaller doses, smaller measures. You know, everyone has suffered loss. Everyone has suffered some change in their life that made them, you know, change the direction of where they were going. And I think they can relate to that through Walter Nash.
And Walter Nash is driven by a number of things. You know, in the first book, a lot of that's about protecting his family and obviously survival. But in the second book, he's driven by revenge. He wants to get the person who brought this all upon him sort of indirectly in that the FBI wanted him to investigate this criminal organization. So he wants to go after the head of this criminal organization for all the things she has done, not only to him personally and his family, but sort of at large, because she's sort of this evil force in the world. So tell us a little bit about this, you know, antagonist that he has and who he wants to get revenge on.
So her name is Victoria Steers, and she's head of this criminal organization that actually has its tentacles into the firm that Nash worked for. So she's a global criminal. And Victoria Steers is the reason why I needed to write a second book. If I had sort of left her one-dimensional, I could have ended this story with Nash Falls and a very sort of predictable ending with her. But I decided to do something with Victoria Steers I'd never really done with an antagonist of her level before. And that required me writing a second novel. As complicated and as multi-layered as Walter Nash is, I think that readers will find that Victoria Steers matches him in that regard. I built her up as a sort of extraordinary evil character. And as a writer, when you do that, I've always thought that to play fair with the reader, if you ask something extraordinary of your characters, you have to give them an extraordinary motivation and backstory to match that. You can't just pull it out and say, oh, well, it was just because. I don't want to hear it was just because. I want to see the cold, hard facts that drove that person to where they became that sort of monster. And that's in this novel, that's where you learn about Victoria Steers. And then I took those two characters, damaged and flawed and multi-layered, multi-dimensional, and I thrust them together. Quite frankly, not knowing at that point what was going to happen when those two collided. But I like to think of it as like this amazing battle of wits, cat and mouse. But at the end, something deeper than that, more poignant. It sort of starts out, it's kind of like, you know, some of my favorite Hitchcock flicks, where you've got someone on the inside and they're only one step ahead of the cat and anything could happen. And you're tense all the time about, oh my God, is it going to get found out or not? So I give you all of that, but then I give you something more on top of it.
And his character, Walter Nash, thinks of her one-dimensionally at first. She's just evil. I need to eliminate her. I need to kill her. But as he gets to know her, he realizes, no, this is a multi-layered person. And in fact, at one point in their discussion, she says, even evil people, you know, have moments of goodness, something to that. I paraphrasing there. But he begins to realize that she's not everything he thinks she is. She's much more than what he thinks she is.
And I, the reason I sort of put that together the way that I did, I wanted that paradigm to show people, look, you can make snap judgments about people all you want. And in this day and age, when it's like we only have 7 seconds to size up someone before we have to move on to someone else, I want people to understand that never believe that you can understand somebody meeting them one time or being told something about them by someone else and just accepting it as true. And yes, am I speaking about all the stuff you read online? If you hear it 3 times, it must be true, even though it could be 3 lives told together. Yes, I am addressing that. The only way you get to know someone is to spend time with them through thick and thin, through good times and through bad times, to see exactly who they are. People are complicated. They are very complicated, and you cannot figure them out in 1 or 2 meetings. And Nash needed a long time with Victoria Steers before he was able to sort of unravel that and see who was inside.
One of the things that happens to both of these characters are really messed up family relationships. I mean, Walter has a bad relationship with his father when he was alive, and Victoria has a very bad relationship with her mother.
Those influences can be dynamic and traumatic, depending on, you know, what's going on in each individual's lives. It was, for me, the father-son relationship with Walter Nash really had a great influence on how he turned out as a person. Mostly positive, but obviously some baggage on top of that. With Victoria Steers, her mother was probably 99% of the reason why she turned out the way she did, but I left 1% of her still there. And that 1%, while it was small in comparison, it was still alive and still had an opportunity to reemerge itself. You know, you only need one seed to grow a flower. So I left a little bit of Victoria Steers, who she used to be, to see if maybe the rest of her could come back. And the reader can read the book and see if she did or not.
And there is a character, in fact, Victoria Steers, basically Nanny, who never loses faith in her, believes that there's still a seed of goodness within her.
Yeah, Hiroko was family to Victoria Steers, more her mother than her mother was. And I also sort of, my theme in there was that if you know someone as a young person, right from the day they were born and growing up, you will know more things intimately about that person than anyone else. Being with someone when they were very young, when they're starting to develop their personality and their characters, make their choices in life, that's the time to observe and get to know someone. And so Rocco knew the real Victoria Steers. And that's why, having known that that person existed at some point in time, no matter what she became later on, Rocco always had great faith, again, that that 1% of Victoria Steers was still there. And depending upon how life turned out and the influences around her, she had the chance to come back as that person too. And so Rocco was a very important character. She was sort of the touchstone that allowed Victoria Steers, I guess, not to forget who she used to be and maybe one day still could be.
Well, talk a little bit more about Walter or Dylan's goal here. He went into it just strictly, like I said, one-dimensional. He wanted revenge. And as he gets more and more into the situation, he realizes revenge is maybe not going to satisfy his needs here. So tell us a little bit about what you wanted to explore in terms of revenge and whether it's ultimately satisfying.
You know, revenge is it's a goal that a lot of people have because it seems like it's a no-brainer. Everybody wants to take their revenge. And once they do, they're going to feel much better about it. That's almost never the case because it's not just about the feeling of revenge. It's about a lot of different feelings that are very complicated. And avenging yourself on someone is not going to make all the hurt go away. So he went in, obviously laser focused, that this is my goal, this is my job, this is what the FBI is telling me to do, and I'm going to do it. But then that one straight line, that through line idea and plan that he had, all of a sudden hit all these complicated factors. It's almost like when a plane hits turbulence, you go up, you go down, and you're not sure of where you're going to go at that point going forward. All you know is that something has to change. And you know, I built Walter Nash that he was a thoughtful, practical, reasoning person who, you know, didn't chase windmills. He tried to live in the world as he saw it. Well, his time spent with Victoria Steers, the world as he saw it changed. And so his mission had to change and his goals had to change. And I think he realized that he was not after revenge so much as he was after understanding of this person and what made them tick. And also a self-examination of himself. You know, he had made a ton of money and he thought he was really happy, but it turned out that a lot of that was almost like, you know, fool's gold. It really wasn't all it was cracked up to be. He thought he had a wonderful marriage, really didn't have a wonderful marriage as it turned out. And it didn't turn out that the money actually made him any happier than he is today. It's all about relationships. It's all about what you think of yourself. It's all about having real goals as opposed to the ones that society says you should have. So this book and these two books were really a self-exploration of Walter Nash's life. And it also was very much the same for Victoria Steers. You know, they were trying to figure out exactly who they were.
A lot of moral dilemmas for him. You know, not only do you have to revisit the idea of revenge, is that what I really want? But what is justice in this case? It gets very murky.
You know, there are a lot of different players. There are multiple antagonists, and I won't reveal too much, but it's certainly not just Victoria Steers. There are multiple antagonists, and they all have varying levels of guilt and culpability. And some crimes committed by others are much, you know, much harsher, worse than crimes committed by some of the other players in the novel as well. So one justice is not going to fit all. You know, you're going to have degrees of that. And I think when you get to the end and you realize that, I think that justice was meted out pretty fairly, depending on what the person had done in the course of the novel. But at the end, you can have laws and you can have punishments that are legal. You can go to prison for a while or forever. But at the end of the day, I think the worst punishments sometimes come from the inside of people when they realize what they've done. And some have no remorse, you know, they're not built that way. But the ones who do have remorse, I think the most difficult punishment of all is how you see yourself at the end, that you actually did those things. And you're going to judge yourself worse than anyone else will.
This book, I would say, is a thriller, of course. There's a lot of action in here, but a lot of thoughts about morality and, like you said, self-examination, et cetera. So I think it'll be kind of a balanced read for someone that's kind of looking for something beyond just a heavy action thriller, that there's a lot to think about after they finish this book.
I hope so, yes. That's why I wrote it.
So tell us about what's next for you.
So in the fall, you're going to see another 620 Man adventure, Travis Devine. He is on a new mission that'll take him to a distant country where most of the action takes place. And I love his character because every book I continue to evolve who he is. You'll learn a lot more about his family in this one. I haven't really talked about them all that much in the three preceding books. So really, this is a very much of a self-exploration, self-examination book for him as well. There's lots of action and thrills, and he has a mystery to unravel. So everybody will get a good dose of that. But I think, the older you get, this is my 30th year in published. And I just realized that this morning, actually. And I think, you get to a certain stage in your career and you want to delve deeper into your characters, because really what you're doing is you're delving deeper into yourself. And when you get to a certain age, people tend to look a little more inward than outward. Youth is like what's in front of me. A little bit of age on you, you turn your eyeballs around and you look inside a little bit more. So I think that's what you're going to see with Devine this time.
Well, David, before I let you go, I want to give you an opportunity to talk with us about the Wish You Well Foundation, the work you and your wife are doing there.
We founded the program about 25 years ago. We promote family literacy across the United States, and we've funded programs in pretty much all 50 states. Look, reading is the most fundamental skill we'll have. Reading will determine how good of a world we're going to have. If fewer and fewer people read, we're going to have a terrible world, just a terrible world. Because books build empathy, books build good human beings. The lack of books do not build good people, and the lack of books means we are going to have a dearth of empathy across the world. So you better buckle up, because if we don't get our reading levels up, it's not going to be pretty. So the Wish You Well Foundation, its mission is to eradicate illiteracy in the United States, but even more than that, we want to teach as many people as possible to read at the highest levels possible and to make them dedicated, consistent readers throughout their entire life. We are up against an enormous wall because, as you know, I'm sure everyone realizes reading rates are plummeting across all age groups. Social media is not helping because now I just read a stat where the average attention span for an American is 42 seconds. That, for me, is probably the biggest crisis we face as a people, as a nation, as a world. So we are doing everything we can to try to turn that around. And I always tell everybody, if you know someone who doesn't read, make it your mission to turn them into a reader and then keep going.
Well, this current novel is Hope Rises. It's by David Baldacci. David, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Always enjoy it. Thank you.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.